Radio that matters.
Every morning with This Morning.
We head on location now to Beijing, China, which has launched a new railway service from the Zhejiang province, if my pronunciation is correct. If not, we'll get a correction in a moment, in the eastern part of the country, to travel all the way to London. It's the first train of this China Railway, and it departed from Yiwu, a city near Shanghai, last Monday. It's impressive, covering 12,000 kilometres in just 18 days, and very much part of China's One Belt, One Road policy, aiming to recreate the mysticism almost surrounding the Silk Road. Mr. Wade Shepherd has certainly captured that mysticism, as he is working on a book, having already been the author of Ghost Cities of China. He's a contributor at Forbes. Thank you so much for joining us. Good morning.
Hey, good morning. How are you?
Yeah, very good. We've got a lot of romance around these subjects of railway travel and the old Silk Road. But what's the reality been like for you traveling along that area?
The reality is, well, I mean, what they say? They say they're kind of recreating the ancient Silk Road, and in a lot of ways, they're doing things that are very similar to that, kind of building these massive trade hubs in places where there haven't been these trade hubs since the days of the ancient Silk Road. And in these places, they're trying to like add value, added manufacturing, and kind of like doing all these things like they used to do in the past. As far as like the romanticism, as of yet, we don't have the caravan sarais of like all these traders from like all over the world meeting together in these places, but we might in the future. They're still very early on in the project.
Can I just clarify something straight away? Because I personally would find it fascinating to travel along this railway, 12,000 kilometers to London from China. Is it actually something that passengers, ordinary passengers, can benefit from, or is it strictly cargo?
No, as of right now, these rail lines are strictly cargo. I'm trying to get on a train going across Kazakhstan in a couple of weeks. But for the most part, no, these are not trains that you would want to ride on unless you were a vagabond or a hobo or something
right.
like that.
Okay, so how are you doing your traveling around? Because I read a piece that you found yourself in the middle of nowhere in Horgos on the China-Kazakhstan border, that was an interesting article.
That's been an ongoing theme in the past 2 years. I've been traveling along these routes because, I mean, they're building this infrastructure in these new cities and new trade hubs in places where literally there was nothing before. That's been like one of the most common things that people have been saying to me along these travels is, you know, 2 years ago, there was nothing here. 5 years ago, there was nothing here. And when I show up, it still kind of looks like there's nothing there, right? Because these places are, like, emerging very literally in the middle of nowhere.
So how do they make it work to build a hub, for example, for tech expertise in Horgos with nothing else for miles to see?
Well, I mean, it's a multi-stage process, and it's a very long-term process. I mean, the countries that are building this aren't really looking for returns until like 20, 25, 30 years from now. And the first stage of that project, this project, is building the infrastructure, building the rail lines, building the infrastructure, building the logistics hubs, and kind of like creating this framework that the rest of the network can kind of grow off of. I mean, the model for this development is Dubai, the Jebel Ali free zone in Dubai, where they very literally went out to the middle of nowhere and built this new city that kind of grew off of these logistical transport hubs.
Well, like I said, it sounds very romantic, but there's a very practical element there too, and actually the reality sounds almost quite Spartan and brutal for now. How are you personally able to research this with the barriers presumably that exist?
Well, I mean, those barriers are kind of dropping. I mean, this network is nothing if not high tech. I mean, the roads that they're being built are some of the most modern in the world. The rail
right.
lines, some of the most modern in the world. And these ports are, you know, they're aiming to make them, you know, not just a step up, step above what the country currently has, but they're making them on the global standard. And they're inviting in, you know, a lot of a lot of developers who have this expertise, such as Dubai Ports, they're building a lot of ports, and they're kind of making it like very, very high standard, very, very first class infrastructure. They're building in these places that, you know, they kind of like skipped many steps in the middle as far as building a lot of this infrastructure. So, I mean, traveling around these places, yeah, and then you go out into the middle of nowhere, and then all of a sudden you're in, you know, one of the most high tech, you know, dry ports like on the planet. So it's kind of surreal in a lot of ways.
Yeah. And China's obviously already had a highly sophisticated trade system for some time, reaching across the world with its products, including to European cities by railway, but by all sorts of means of transportation. Why is this new project going to make a difference, even if it is down the road?
Okay. I mean, as of now, China has 39 rail lines, direct freight trains going between China and Europe. Why this makes a difference? Because it fills a gap in the transportation offerings between, you know, slow sea transport and really expensive air transport. And it takes about half the time at sea, you know, at about, you know, a fifth of the price as air to ship products along these trains. It's actually very cheap. I mean right now it costs maybe $2,000 to ship a container from China to Europe, and a lot less to ship a container from Europe to China. And when we're looking at the fact that the items that are being transported along these rail lines are typically high-value goods, like electronics, high-fashion items, and kind of like premium meats, fresh meat, and premium produce, the value of the products that are being shipped is so high that, you know, the cost of transporting them is really negligible. And economically speaking, yeah, it is giving these freight forwarders and giving these companies a new way to ship their products across the Eurasian landmass. And when we look at China and we look at this broader movement of moving production and manufacturing ever farther inward and farther towards the west, and we talk about Horgos, which is on the China-Kazakhstan border. Now, if you were going to make something in Horgos, or even Chengdu, for that matter, which is in central China, and want to ship it to Europe, I mean, you're going to have to, like, you know, ship it overland first, all the way across China, from the west to the east of China. It's like thousands of kilometers just to ship it west again. And so these new rail lines are kind of cutting out that unneeded step of shipping products east to ship them west, and you can ship them directly west, directly from the places that they are being made.
How interested are you in the political ramifications of this? China's facing some challenges, obviously, with a number of traditional trade partners like the United States, with ourselves here in South Korea right now. This is a route that moves in the other direction. It ends in the United Kingdom, which is set to leave the European Union. How much should we be reading into that?
Well, I mean, any time two countries kind of interact together economically, or especially when they bolster and raise their trade ties, they're also like intertwining themselves politically as well. So these kind of, so you can't really separate the economic from the political as well. But one thing that's really interesting during the Xi era in China is that whenever there's like a political or economic or diplomatic vacuum in the world, China's always right there to fill it. So when the EU and the United States like slapped sanctions on Russia, China was right there with, you know, investment deals and kind of trade pacts and everything to kind of make up the difference. Same thing in Sri Lanka when the EU and the U.S. started like putting restrictions on the country due to perceived or alleged war crimes. China was right there, and the country just made this massive pivot over to China, and now they're resulting like $8 billion in infrastructure investment. So, like, and the UK and Brexit is really no different. Right now, the UK is having somewhat of a diplomatic breakup with the EU, and China is right at their door with, you know, a lot of big offers of investment, trying to bolster these political ties through economic investment.
Yeah, really interesting to hear you say that, and it, in some ways, ties into your previous work on those ghost cities now being filled up by actual people. Some of them look very odd, you know, fake Parisian cities now coming to life. But China's also made a lot of recent headlines for its work in renewable energy. Do you take quite seriously these policies, the fact that they might stick in the long term, despite some rather pessimistic economic outlooks for the country?
I mean, China does things different than we do it in the West. It's not always about the dollars and cents. And a lot of these investments are sometimes not being done to make a profit, but to, like, get the Communist Party of China stuff that the Communist Party wants. Like these trains, this 39-train network going between China and Europe, that's pretty much 100% subsidized by the Chinese government. Mm. They're not looking to make a profit off of this, but they want it because it allows them to move towards bigger goals, such as establishing the conceptual link between countries for diplomatic reasons. I mean, these trains have really become the new pandas in China. You know, China's long-standing practice of panda diplomacy. Like, as a sign of friendship, you know, they'll give a country a panda. And now, as a sign of friendship, China's kind of giving these countries these trains, right? Like, okay, we're going to, like, you know, join together and have more economic and political interaction. And we're going to give you this train that goes from our country to your country. And we're going to subsidize it, and your manufacturers can use it and whatever. But, I mean, there's definitely a symbolic aspect to these trains.
Mr. Shepherd, thank you so much for being on location. Good luck with your continued travels.
Thank you.
Along a road less travelled for some period of time, but looks like it'll get a bit busier, the new Silk Road. Mr. Wade Shepherd, also author of Ghost Cities of China. And that's just about it for our show today. Thank you very much for your company. We'll be back tomorrow from 7:05. Stay with us for CareerScape and Kurt Asian just after your news headlines with Julie Sohn.